Okay, part two of Shlishi of Shmos, and so much to say. We got to a certain point, but let's just back up a little bit just to bring it into context. We had started talking about Moshe Rabbeinu's adventures as he ventured out into the world, having gotten a sense of his history and his peoplehood. And just to say a little bit more about that and then to move forward into the next stage. So we talked a little bit about the complexity of understanding what happened with the Mitzri, that it's not clear whether he killed him intentionally, he killed him directly, he killed him indirectly. Was the Mitzri actually Chayiv Misa? Was this something that was justified? Was it more than was justified? So we saw many perspectives on that. There were a lot of questions that had to be accounted for. Rav David Tzvi Hoffman has a interesting perspective here where he emphasizes that a little bit the questions are the point, that this was kind of an extra legal proceeding. This was outside of the normal parameters of Beis Din or of anything that was within a system, because the message here is to show how Moshe was moved by a passion to be the protector and defender of the Jewish people. So it wasn't coming in the context of anything that was judicial or anything that was formal. It was justified and it was understandable and it was necessary, but it was still coming more as a reflection of Moshe's desire to be a defender and a protector, and that was what was motivating and what was characterizing what was going on. And the Malbim has a comment where he also notes that in terms of the second episode, where he goes out again on the second day and he sees the two Jews fighting, so there, the fact that the Torah tells us "Vayitzeh b'yom hasheni," that's also a part of Moshe's godless, that already now the heat is on a little bit, because there are a lot, as we'll see, because of what happened the first time, and the fact that Moshe's desire to see how he can be helpful and to pursue this role as the defender of the Jewish people is still not diminished at all. He's still willing to go out again and to see how he can be helpful. And when he encounters these two Jews fighting, so we started to talk a little bit about how the reaction that they have to him when they say, "Misam Chalish, who made you in charge of us? Who made you the boss of us? Where does that come from?" So we noted that Rav Shlomo Shmuel Hirsch has a comment there that you see the difference, that these Jews who've been subjugated by the Mitzrim, so they're able to take a lot of abuse from the Mitzrim. But as soon as it's a Jew who says anything, all of a sudden, who made you the boss? Who gave you the right to talk? And that's reflective of something. And the Azayim Matoru, who has so much to say about this, so Leo, we could just focus on him the whole time and we'll say a lot from him. Let's go up. So he has a long discussion here about how, along similar lines to Rav Hirsch, that there seems to be this extra sensitivity when it's coming from a Jew saying, "Listen, you're not doing the right thing here." And you might think that this was something that developed only out of the context of their treatment in Mitzrayim, he writes. But if you think about it, you see it goes back further. And it goes back already to Yosef and his brothers, who were so sensitive to the idea that he should have any leadership over them, even though we see that it becomes clear that he indeed was quite talented and capable as a leader, and yet the notion that he should have any authority over them was something that they reacted to with a visceral negativity. And so too, this seems to be a trait that is inherent in the Jewish mentality, that the notion that anyone from within the Chavra is more capable, is more qualified, more intelligent, is more wise as far as these are concerned, these things are concerned, is something that becomes very hard to take. And that's a mita which itself needs to be addressed. And you see that reflected here. We also spoke about how when they make this point that you're going to do something to us like you did to the Mitzri, so Moshe's reaction to that is, "Achein noda hadavar," that, uh-oh, I see that it's known what was happening here, what had taken place the day before. I see it's already out, so that's bad news. And Rashi quotes the idea that he was able to discern from here that I've always been wondering what should be the merit of these people, that they should be destined for salvation, and or that rather they should be destined to wait for salvation, that they should have this exile. And now I understand that I see that there are deluge torn among them, there are Bali Lashara among them. And we started to talk, that was when we got cut off on Friday, on Thursday, we started to talk about whether there was some particular aspect to this Avera that could explain why it should be something that should be a cause of their exile even more than other things. And we noted, first of all, as far as the Lashon Hara should go, the idea that there's a Lashon Hara that's particularly egregious here, that on the one hand, you might think that as far as seeing Lashon Hara is just relating facts, so it's kind of understandable that they would tell the story that if somebody killed another person, you would think, okay, this is somebody I want to look out for. I want to be aware that they're capable of that, that there's some toelos in that. But the real Lashon Hara is in how you characterize things, and that to perceive Moshe's action as something that was there to hurt the Jewish people rather than to help them, and that to not appreciate that it was an act of defense and protection, and to characterize it as some kind of just negative aggression. So that's the kind of Lashon Hara that's really damaging, and it's reflective of a type of cynicism. And that's where there's a tremendous despair, that how can you hope that there's ever going to be a Geula, and it's perhaps evocative. The Avraham comments here that this is the same Moshe Rabbeinu who later on is going to defend them through everything, and yet this is going to be so discouraging. And perhaps it's evocative. One could make the parallel that we find when they were in the Sodomim and they were complaining about the food in the Midbar. That also brought about this attitude of despair. And perhaps, again, it's not that it's the most egregious Avera, but that it just reflects you can't win. That if that's going to be the attitude, that there's going to be a negative spin put on everything, then yes, Avodah Zarah, the Chet HaEgel, that we can try to defend. But an attitude that's going to say nothing's ever good, there's never going to be any hope. So then what are you going to do with such a people? How are you going to redeem such a people? There are other approaches as well. There's Naim Matorik, and we'll mention him many times today. Lutzkarov writes that the notion of a geula is going to depend on them being able to come together as one and being able to unite. And here we just see again and again that there are problems with that, because first of all, he saw, this was consistent with his interpretation we mentioned on Thursday, that the reference to the brothers being among the brothers in the context of the Mitzri is that there were other Jews seeing what was going on, and none of them stood up for this Jew who was being struck by the Mitzri. So there's a lack of Achdus there, and now he sees they're fighting with each other, and then Moshe just tries to help, and they're going to turn him in. So you see how disconnected they are. You see how disunity is prevalent among them. It's not really very hopeful as far as there being a geula. In the Sefer Berariah of the Maharal, he has an added aspect here where he talks about Achein Doda HaDavar, and there's a little bit of synergy here to think about as far as our Baba Basra, as far as our Chazara for our first parak, and the whole mentality that he focuses on just the aspect of publicity and the idea that there's Amidas Hatznias, and the whole notion of Hezek Re'iah and as a value system, that there's a Midas Hatznias that is appropriate for the Jewish people as they aspire towards nationhood. And if there is a lot of gossip and a lot of talking and a lot of revealing, so that is not consistent with the mentality that needs to be there in order for there to be a redemption. And this is something that was expounded upon at length by Rav Yosef Engel, the Sefer Beis HaOtzer, where he talks about this idea that there's a part of the Jewish personality that requires more of a midah of tznius, and this is really one of the major elements we saw as one of the themes of Hezek Re'iah, that there is a midah of privacy and the tznius. Whether or not both parties care, it doesn't matter, that this is something we should strive for. And this is something that Moshe Rabbeinu saw as lacking. Achein lo da'adavar. If they like talking, they like revealing things, this is going to be an impediment to the geula. So here there is certainly some synergy philosophically to what we are learning about in our first parak here. Okay, so to move on from the chicken, move on in the Pesukim. So that's where we left off. So now the action continues and the stage shifts. So Pasuk Tetzvav, it says, Vayishmo Karo Vesadaber Hazeh. Vayivakesh Laharigas Moshe, Vayivrach Moshe, Vayifaro, Vayishiv Ares Midyad, Vayishiv Raha Be'er. All these psukim are so chock full. Every Pasuk is 10 things that happen. So what happens in this Pasuk? So Karo hears about what happened. And Rashi emphasizes that it had to be here because, don't forget, that these people who he tried to help, who he tried to settle the score, you know, it was recent Daf Yomi, just to help appreciate this as a chesed, that the Daf Yomi, the Gemara in the end of Misach Chastanias, which was Daf Yomi, I guess now already 3 or 4 weeks ago, but it lasts, the Gemara tells the story that the broker Chazaz, marketplace, and they saw Eliyahu Navi, and Eliyahu Navi told them there are certain people who are destined for a special reward in Olam Haba, and he had to investigate on his own what was special about these people. So he asked around, he said, what's your special midah? And he asked this group of two who were identified as being specially destined for this reward, and they told him that we are jesters, that we cheer up people who are sad. And that's one of the major makoros of the value of the sense of humor, or the chesed that's involved in being able to cheer people up. And those same people, they said, when we see people fighting, we try to make it better. So this is a chesed. This is an effort to try to help. And that's how they react. They tell on him to Paro. And it's not benign, so Paro wants to kill him. And there's nine the Torah comments, just to continue the whole theme that he's already been developed here. You see that he commented on the previous pasuk about how disunity was such a problem. And you see, even for this, they can't get together. They're using this effort to try to help them as a reason to be malshin on him. So Paro tries to kill him. And Rashi here makes a reference to Chazal. This is actually Yerushalmi in the beginning of the ninth parak of Brachos, which is also continued. The Chazal Darshan this pasuk, and also pasuk in Parshas Yisrael, Be'etzileini Mecharev Paro, that there was an effort to actually, they caught him and they tried to kill him. And they took a sword and they tried to chop off his head, and the sword bounced off his neck and ended up killing the executioner. So it was this miraculous salvation of Moshe. The Torah Tumimah suggests that maybe Chazal saw a diyuk here in this pasuk, together with that other pasuk, which specifically refers to Charev Paro. But here, that Vayivakesh Laharog is Moshe. If they didn't catch him at all, it could have said Vayivakesh is Moshe. They were looking to catch Moshe. But it sounds like they had him. And Vayivakesh Laharog is Moshe. They had him, they weren't able to kill him. That something miraculous happened. And they were unable to carry it out. That's what the Gemara understands. That afilu cherub chadam unachas al tzavar shalodam. But even if you have a sharp sword that's right there on your neck, you still should not assume that there's no hope. Al yinat someone arachimim shouldn't assume there's no hope. You see what can happen. So, but okay. So Moshe survives. Vayibrach Moshe neifaro vayeshav eretz midyan vayeshav halaber. So Moshe runs away to Midjan, and the Ramban comments here that it says Vayesha Beretz Midjan. Don't say Vayelach Beretz Midjan. He didn't go straight to Midjan. He was running away. So he was looking for far off places, and he was bouncing around a little bit, and ultimately he settles in Midjan. The Yazayim Latorah comments here that he was following Yisro. But if you recall, the Medrash tells us that Yisro was an advisor to Paro. And when he wasn't happy with what Paro wanted to do, and he couldn't change his mind, so he ran. So he ran away, he fled, and apparently he was safe there. Apparently that wasn't a place where Paro was able to catch him, so Moshe realized that was... Okay, so in any event, so he ends up in Midjan, Vayesha Vahla Be'er. So he sits by the well, Rishonim have many explanations why he was sitting by the well, but here Rashi emphasizes that he's looking for a shidduch, that he learned this from Yaakov, that we have a whole history, I think we spoke about a little bit in one of the earlier Parshas Shiurim, why there is specifically this history of shidduchim happening for our great leaders and ancestors by the wells. So he wanted to continue that, so he learned from Yaakov that he had a shidduch by the bear, and he decided to do that also. Here the Osnayim L'Torah comments that after this brush with death, he began to consider the fact that he wasn't going to leave any descendants if he didn't find the shidduch, so he felt that was a priority. And here we are introduced to Yisro. And Yisro is a very prominent and significant character in Chumash. So here he's introduced, L'Kohen Midjan Shababanos. So here the Kohen Midjan, Rashi tells us a little bit about his history here. And there's going to be much more significance to him that he was the Rav Sheben, he was the greatest of that. He was a great religious person among their culture and their religion. But we hear we learn from elsewhere, Rashi will tell us a little bit, but that he had thoroughly examined all the theologies of the world and had looked into all of the idolatries and tried very hard to seek out God. And he decided that he was going to abandon the idolatry. So that's what Rashi just refers to here, B'kitzur. Uparashlo me Avodah Zarah. He separated from the Avodah Zarah, V'niduhu me'atzlam. They ended up excommunicating him. So he had seven daughters. So why does the Torah emphasize that he had seven daughters? So Rabbeinu Bach has a fascinating comment here that Moshe is looking for a shidduch. So he figured, okay, he's not going to give him such a hard time. He has seven daughters to marry off. So this is going to be a little bit of a quicker process. But Yisnayim Torah also adds that this is showing the heroism of Moshe, because here he's going to end off, as the Pesukim are going to continue, he's going to end off defending all seven, and the seven couldn't defend themselves, so apparently it must be a significant threat. So this highlights the heroism of Moshe. My father liked to tell the joke that Yisro has seven daughters. We also know he had seven names, so the correlation between the seven daughters and the seven names, every time he married off a daughter, he had to change his name in order to hide from the creditors, because of all the bills from the weddings. But okay, so that's so in any event, so he had these seven daughters, Batalona, Batidlena, Batmelena, Asarahante, Mahashka, Son Abihan, and they were trying to get the water, Vyavo Haron, Yigashub, Vyaka Moshe, Vyashian, Vyashka, Sonam. So here these shepherds came to fight them off. And you might think this is just because of competition over the water, but Rashi adds here, Nehanito, it's because they were unwelcome because of this whole history with Yisro. And Moshe was the hero. Moshe came and saved them, and he gave water for their flock. And here this Nayim Torah comments that it's not just the girls, he did it for the shepherd also, he did it for everybody, because the whole point is he was trying to make peace, he was trying to create shalom between them, so therefore he wanted to help them all out. The first comments over here that it's not that he necessarily knew from looking who was right, who was wrong. He wasn't able to necessarily perceive justice, but he was also aware of the vulnerable. And that's a part of his whole instinct, heroism. So he wants to first try to protect those who seem to be persecuted, who seem to be vulnerable, and then, okay, let's try to settle things. Let's try to figure it out. But Tavona, why did you come so quickly? But Tamarna, Ish Mitzri, Hitzivana, Miad Haroah, Begam Dalo, Lalalano, Vayashka, said something. So they said, guess what happened? You won't believe it. This Egyptian man, he saved us from those bully shepherds, and he also gave us all the water. So here, there is an unbelievable medrash. The medrash, not here, the medrash in Parshas Veshana. There's an unbelievable medrash relating to this pasuk, that the medrash says that there was the plea from Moshe Rabbeinu. It's part of his whole desperate request that he should be allowed at Eretz Yisrael. So he said, it's not fair that here Yosef, his bones are going to be brought into Eretz Yisrael to be buried, and I can't even get in? So to that, HaKadosh Baruch Hu responds, yes, it's fair, because Yosef, when he was in Mitzrayim, he acknowledged being an Ivri in the house of Potiphar. And you, Moshe, when they called you Mitzri, you were just quiet and you didn't object. So that's an unbelievable kind of thing. And the Sefer Be'er Yosef, he has a whole drush about this, very fascinating reading, where he says that you see here that here Moshe Rabbeinu was involved in such heroism and such nobility and everything that led up to this whole episode with the Mitzri and the Jew and with the two Jews. And now coming down here and trying to settle this whole situation, bringing Shalom and defending the daughters. And all of that is being presented to Yisro. And Yisro, if you recall, he ran away from Mitzrayim, and he was well aware of the character of the people in Mitzrayim and all of the terrible issues that pervaded society. And now it seems like, okay, there's this heroic guy, and that's going to get credited to Mitzrayim, when that could have been credited to the Ivrim, to the Jewish people. What a terrible lost opportunity. And he goes into great detail about how much was here of potential as far as what Moshe could have credited to the Jewish people and how much Yosef did and how different that was. And even though it was only for a moment, because eventually it's going to come out, but just even that temporary loss of what could have accredited the Jewish people. And he goes into great length about how this is an example of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's medactic tzaddikim, that you see the very high standard he's held to. And presumably the rest of us who are zocha to enter Eretz Yisrael without being held to such a high standard, without accomplishing anywhere near as much. It's just an example of how you see tzaddikim being held to a tremendously high standard. But nonetheless, that seems to be the case here, that the issue was that Moshe could have done so much to bring credit to Eretz Yisrael. And even though, presumably, his motive in not doing so was modesty, he didn't want to claim that whatever he did was such a big deal. He didn't want to take too much credit at all, whether it would go to him or to the Jewish people or anything. He just didn't want to draw attention. But still, all of that was such a lost opportunity. That's what this Medrash is getting at. So it's worth looking at. It's about a page and a half in the Be'er Yosef. Yeah, so a whole description of just how much there was that wasn't being properly acknowledged, and that was a lost opportunity. Now, the big question you could ask here is that, okay, so that's striking, but what about also that it sounds like he wasn't in the room? Because that's the whole point that he says to him in the next pasuk, why did you leave him? So it sounds like he wasn't there. So the idea that he should be blamed for being silent when he's being called a Mitzri. So already that's quite amazing, but here it didn't even seem like he heard it. So there's Nayim Latorah, again, he actually deals with that. He talks about this Medrash also, and he considers that question. And he suggests maybe he was right outside, so he could hear it, he could have jumped in. Or maybe it's a reflection of the fact that the way he was presenting himself made him look like he was Mitzri specifically, and that's why, that's how it came across to them, and that's what they were displaying. He also goes to great length about how this Medrash just shows, you see there's an unbelievable standard that the tzaddikim are held to, and he goes into great detail about that, both Svar of Be'er Yosef and the Naim Latorah both talk about this Medrash and both highlight that, but it's clear that there's a tremendous diktuk tzaddikim that's happening here, but nonetheless that seems to be the case. There's another Medrash that has a whole different take on this, and the Medrash says that Moshe had said to these girls, to these daughters, that he's here because of the Mitzri, meaning that this whole situation kind of developed because since he killed the Mitzri, and since then he met these two Jews who then told on him about the Mitzri, and then he had to run away, and then he ended up down there because he was there, so he ended up protecting them. So it's all because of the Mitzri, and that's what they ended up representing back to the father, that it's because of the Ish Mitzri that they were able to be rescued. So the Yosnayim Latorah comments about that, that a little surprising, that's a little bit oversharing, little bit too much information. You think, here, this guy is on the run. And right away, he starts filling his whole history and all the vulnerability about why he has to flee. You would think he wouldn't necessarily be so forthcoming. So he suggests it's a reflection of the fact, with back to our previous discussion about the circumstances of killing the Mitzri. So he suggests that perhaps it was not his intent to actually kill the Mitzri, as some of the Mefarshim understood. He was just trying to stop him from hitting the Jew. He wasn't trying to kill him. So the fact that he died, that was a Ritzicha B'Shogeg, and the Ritzeich B'Shogeg was Chayav Galus, and he has to be exiled. And that's indeed the case. So here he is, he's wandering around, he's exiled as a Ritzeich B'Shogeg. And the din is, when you're Ritzeich B'Shogeg and you're Galus, so when you show up at the place that you were exiled to, you have to tell them what happened. You have to explain you're not some big hero, but you're sent out because of a very disreputable incident. And that's what he was doing. So he was telling them the whole story about what happened, and that's how they ended up representing that in their description of him. Okay, so Pasuk continues, Vayom Rabbanosa Vayo, Lamazazatanisaish, Krenlo, Yochalachim. So why did you leave him? So call him and bring him inside. So here, Rashi, who's continuously giving us a theme here that there's always a little bit more in terms of what people are perceiving in this whole Aliyah and what the backgrounds, the continuous theme in the Rashi is here. So here Rashi tells us that he was able to figure out, that Yisrael figured out this must be a descendant of Yaakov, that he had such an easy time with the bear, the water jumped up, that it must be he's a descendant of Yaakov, so therefore call him in to give him some bread, and Rashi fills in Shema Yisach as we can, so that maybe he'll marry one of you. So let's bring him in here. And here, so that's a goal, but also the Gemara in Sanhedrin comments that you see how there's such value to hospitality that it makes people closer. And look at the impact that it had for the host that Yisrael was able to marry, that his descendants would serve in the Lishkas HaGaz. You see what wonderful things came for Yisrael because of his hospitality. There's Naima Torah also comments here. You see for Moshe Rabbeinu, you see how things end up flipping, that the same mita that he had of getting involved in people's situations and trying to help. So at first that made him homeless, then had him chased out of his home, but had him exiled. But now that's what's bringing him back. That same now, because he expressed that same mida with the daughters of Israel. So that's what's going to bring him into their household. So he tells them, they tell him, it should come in. But Yoel Moshe Roshav, this is Aish, Vayitain Asipor, Vitov Moshe. Every pasuk has something that's happening. So Vayoel Moshe, Rashi explains based on the Onkelos that sounds like it means that he agreed, although Rashi also mentions another interpretation that he took a oath to Yisro. He's not going to leave without his permission, which comes up again later. So here he agrees to come in. Moshevus and Sa'ish, it's a long discussion again with Naima Torah so much in this Aliyah. It's a fascinating sefer in general. He has a lot to say about here, so you see now he's going to live with Yisrael, that there's a lot to consider about the fact that, in general, this whole parsha tells us so much about Moshe's history, and presumably there's a lot that we can learn from Moshe's history. We spoke a little bit about this on Thursday, about how this Aliyah particularly is giving us more about Moshe's background and the impact that it has, but also just the fact that so much of his development happens separated from the Jewish people. It happens in a context where he's a Mitzrayim, he's a Midian, he's away from the Jewish people for huge portions of his life. And it's interesting why that should be. So the Oznayim Torah, he has a number of theories as to why that is. And then in the end, he has a theory that this is a refutation to anyone who would ever say that how could you expect me to be a noble Jew? My parents didn't teach me right. They didn't tell me what they needed to know. So to that, you see Moshe Rabbeinu, who was separated from his original roots for so much of his so much of his formative years, and you see, nonetheless, he found the spirit within himself to be the greatest leader of the Jewish people. It's a very powerful thing. Now, presumably, this is not to deny the importance of Chinuch. It can't be the message. But nonetheless, as far as personal initiative and responsibility, to recognize that we have it within us and to be able to draw upon that and to recognize that that's ultimately where it comes from is a very powerful message. On a personal note, I just noticed that, so my Aznayim Torah and Shmos, I have an old copy, an original copy, and it's actually inscribed by the author, by Zalman Sorotskin, because my mother's stepfather was a Hasidic man who was well known to many of the Talmidei Chacham of Europe, and he had it very warmly inscribed from the author. So I just noticed that it's the first time I saw this in this particular sefer, that this section he has underlined. So he must have been very impacted by this formulation, just the idea that there is within everybody the ability to recognize his own godless and his own mission, and that he can't blame that on anyone else, that he wasn't provided with all the tools. Look at what Moshe Rabbeinu was able to find within himself, despite spending all of these years trying to get on the way. It's a tremendous statement and a refutation to anyone who could say that it's not something that was provided to them. So this is also what's emphasized in the name of his son. You see the next pasuk, "Vatelete Vayikra Eshmo Gershon." So he called his son Gershom. He said, because I was a ger in a strange land, because I was separated. So here the Torah Tumima quotes the Beis Yosef, that the Beis Yosef notes that Gershom with a mem and Gershon with a nun, these are two different names. And Nafkamina, forget, considered to be separate names. They're not the same, they're not just two different spellings of the same name. And the Torah Tumima comments that the reason is because they have different roots. That we see here from the pasuk that Gershom is from the language of Geras, of being foreign. So Ger HaYisiv Eretz Nachriya. And Gershon is from a Lashon of Gerishin. And therefore they have each their own history and their own etymology, and therefore they are two separate names. So that's how he explains this comment. However, just as a kasha, my grandfather, now I'm talking about my paternal grandfather, in his commentary to the Torah Tumim, the Meshivas Nefesh, so he points out that a little bit of a kasha, the Beis Yosef, who makes such a distinction, because so the son of Levi was called Gershom, that's the distinction that's being drawn here, but in Divrei Hayamim, so there it refers to the son of Levi as Gershom. So apparently it's not so meduyik that it is possible to switch Gershom and Gershom, the nun and the mem. So Kashi says, right there, it's hard to understand the Beis Yosef, who takes it for a given that there's such a distinction between the two names as far as Gittin is concerned. So that's something that we have to figure out a little bit. Okay, so just to get to the last second here, so there's a very fascinating comment from the Rishonim, very, very fascinating. Regarding these last psukim, so the last three psukim together of this aliyah, and it's very striking for us. Now the world is in a situation of crisis, and so many times throughout history there have been situations of crisis, and we look to how to get out of a crisis, whether it's a personal crisis or a communal crisis or a world crisis or any type of crisis, whether it's a medical crisis or a military crisis or of any kind. And what this statement in Yerushalmi highlights is that we kind of have to hit it from all directions, that it's not that there is any one approach and that we shouldn't rely on any one approach. So the Medrash notes here, Yerushalmi, in the beginning of time, the very beginning of Maseches Tainus, as we understand, right, that's what Maseches Tainus is about our reaction to crisis and how we use different tools to try to approach HaKadosh Baruch Hu and try to change things. So here, the Yerushalmi says that the Jews were redeemed because of five things, because there are five different things that are all referenced in these three psukim. Okay, so the five things that this Yerushalmi refers to says first, we told, okay, it's the time had come. How do you know the time had come? Because Pasuk of Gimel starts, so just the fact that time had come, okay, so that's one of the, what's one of the five things? Also, we told Tzara, also because the suffering is so significant. Pasuk continues, "Ve'anchu v'nei Yisrael min ha'avoda v'nizaku." So they scream. So they see that they were suffering, and that was itself a second factor. "V'tal shavasam elokim in ha'avoda." The next pasuk continues, "Vayishma elokim es narpasam." So then the Yerushalmi referenced that also, that that mitoch tzvachav, the fact that they were calling out from their tefillah. That's the third factor. "Mitoch chosabos." So it was also the Schosabos that was a factor, because it continues by Yitzchak Elokim as Risao as Avram as Yitzchak as Yaakov. That was the fourth factor, but the Schosabos that was able to make a difference. So what was the fifth factor that contributed to the Geula? Mitoch Tshuva. So where do you see the Tshuva? So that's the last part of the Geula. By Yar Elokim as Bnei Yisrael by Yeda. So God saw them and he knew about them. So apparently that's a reference to tshuva. So it's not clear from the Yerushalmi here how you see tshuva from that. So the Torah Tamima comments based on an idea that there was tshuva on different levels, and the tzaddikim presumably had less of a need to do tshuva, but the Beinonim, they actually did tshuva, and the Rishayim, at least they had hiruri tshuva, they had thoughtful tshuva. So the pasuk is referencing both. So there was that which God saw, and that refers to the actual tshuva that was done by the Benyamin. And God knew, because he was God, he knew about the hirhurim, the thoughts of the tshuva from the Rishayim. A very fascinating drasha from Rav Yosef Engel in his drashos, in the Otzus Yosef, where he notes that the whole idea of yediyah, of knowledge, represents tshuva. And he suggests that it's only specifically in the context of tshuva that you can talk about yediya, because that refers to knowing between two options, to really know what is and what isn't, what's good and what's bad. So somebody who's never sinned, so it's just in his nature to do the right thing, but doesn't necessarily know the difference between good and bad. But somebody who has actually experienced sin and has chosen good over bad, so that's a reflection of yediya, and that's what the Torah means. It talks about yediya as an expression of truth. It said, yes, true, that the pasuk here is referring to God's yediya rather than the yediya of humanity, but it's to suggest a parallelism that God is communicating and is conveying what the people are conveying. So the people had yediyah, the people had a tshuva, and God's yediyah reflects that yediyah, and therefore to be able to actually express that knowledge through tshuva was a very powerful tool as far as bringing the geula. So it's really a fascinating comment, a fascinating comment from Yerushalmi, a fascinating comment from Rav Yosef Engel, and so much to learn from its aliyahs. Again, as we note that this crisis the whole world is enduring, we hope that it is coming to an end. We hope that it's just one more bump in the road. But ultimately, to recognize that there's so many different components, and even just on the spiritual level, how we react, and it should be our zchus, it should be the world's zchus, that through the harnessing of all of these lessons and of all of these tools, we should be zochet to see a better future than Heira B'Yameinu. Look forward to seeing all of you tomorrow. Again, please be in touch with any questions, and that we should all know only good things.
Have a great day, Rabbi.
You too.
Thank you.